outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
I'm Wayne Jacobson, and I want to welcome you back to the God Journey in our continuing seven-week series we're calling Redeeming Love, how Sarah and I found our way through her trauma to a renewed relationship beyond it. Not only was Sarah finding increased healing from her traumatic past, but Sarah and I needed some relational repair in the aftermath of the damage it caused. How does a 47-year-old marriage recover from such a painful experience?
What are some of the key attributes that stand out to the both of you that have helped with this relational repair? Because as I'm hearing your story, both having been in it with you and then now in the process of retelling it, there's a couple of things that really stands out to me, but I want to hear from the two of you. What key themes or attributes really stand out to you that made the relational repair even possible? Because as we talked a little bit earlier, we're talking having multiple professionals in the mental health industry tell you that there was just a fraction of a percent of a possibility that this could happen.
Yeah, I was told it was a 99% chance that Sarah will never come back to you. That was early on, yeah. I think important for me was that Sarah could hold my pain when she saw it. And it didn't destroy her. That's why I wanted to run out of her apartment that night. I'm afraid, my gosh, if she sees me in this much pain, blaming herself for it, it's gonna be overwhelming. The fact that she wanted to hold it with me that night, the fact that she has said, I mean, I've told her to stop saying she's sorry because she's just said it a million times. And I think that's really key to relational repair. You've got to hold the pain. You've got to see it. I've had relationships break where nobody wants to revisit the pain. Nobody wants to go, hey, you know, own their part in what happened. They just want to, oh, let's all go on in the love of Jesus and pretend everything's wonderful. And I just go, I can do that, but it doesn't restore the relationship.
No.
The relationship's still damaged. So that Sarah could hold it with me, that we've talked about it. We even got people around us that don't want to talk about what Sarah's gone through or how we got back together. And that's some of the collateral damage that we talked about. You know, just we're not going to make anybody hear this. But if you want to understand who Sarah is going forward, you'll want to understand a piece of it, especially if she wants to explain it to you. And if you're not interested in that, then that's going to take a while for that relationship to repair. And I get that sometimes that takes time. Mm-hmm. You know, we couldn't repair it on day one when Sarah and I were sitting here with you. There was some work that had to be done. And I hope part of that was the horse whisperer approach that I had been well schooled in by people, which was let her come to me. And at every phase, I patiently, and I mean, it was not easy, waited to take only what she would offer. And to make sure that what she was offering was really true. It was really coming from her and she wasn't feeling pressured by anything. And I like to think that would have helped a bit on your side, no?
Yeah, I mean, initially before I had started with my new therapist and some of the trauma was unraveling in my mind, he was very patient, and I mean he was not reacting the way I was thought or told or expected, and he was exactly the opposite of that, and patient and gentle, and that, especially with this I think it was early on or something, I could tell in the tone of voice if it was soft, calm, gentle, what's another word? Patient, and there was all that in there. I was wanting to talk and felt free to talk and felt, was learning to feel safe, I guess, to express what I was feeling. Plus, also at that time, I didn't even really know what I was feeling. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, I didn't even know what I was feeling. I didn't know why I didn't know what I was feeling. And he had been more, he had been reading on trauma brain and all this and knew a lot more. And he was even explaining me about why I didn't know anything, if that makes sense. Yeah. And so it was, there was one time where we were getting to some, you know, because I was little bit by little bit. And at one point we went to Lazy Dog and took the dogs. There was an open house. And so I was.
And our dog threw up all over the restaurant.
Yes, she did. And which that even in that, he would normally get, he would get frustrated or upset. And I was just trying to calm, you know, I was just, you know, I get feeling that brings back, oh no, what is it going to happen? The response. And then, you know, I can feel that my response coming back and so, but even there were some things that I had not shared to him, about having another phone. Mm. And, there was something else. I forget what was
the other storage unit.
It was the other boyfriend.
Oh, a storage unit. And then one time we were going to get something out of storage unit. And then I would usually preface it by, don't get mad at me. And he would say something, because I, you know, it's that I have two storage units. So, I mean, it's just all this, it was just little bit by little bit. I was, you know, kind of like not testing him, but testing the waters, you know, yeah. Kind of like, you know, how we're going to fare through this. Yeah. And one time his voice, I remember we were sitting on the couch. I could tell his voice was just getting, and it wasn't bad at all, but it was uncomfortable for me. Mm-hmm. And then after a little bit, and I just said, you know, if you just talk softer and gentler and quieter, because I could just feel inside. It was just, I mean, and he would. And then once he did that, then, I mean, just little bit by little bit, those things and what he did, it was creating a safety. The safetyness was becoming stronger. Is that possible? Mm-hmm. So it was gradual for me. And it was just little bit by little bit. And with that, not that I don't know, maybe I didn't trust him, but there was a trust in my heart knowing that, okay, he was going to be okay to share stuff with.
Yeah.
And that's the only way I could share stuff. If any other way, I just started feeling like a panic and anxiety mm-hmm. inside of me. The stomach and all that, and I just couldn't. And but this was even before building up, before we even got into the memory starting to come.
Yeah.
And this is where I'm really grateful for all that God did in the 3 weeks, 5 weeks that we were apart. The tenderness, the tending her garden, the slowing to Sarah's pace, the finding Sarah's tone that makes her open up like a flower, not things that shut her down. Harvey, a friend from Ohio, wrote me one day. I think he wrote me a text, just said, I had this dream about you last summer. I've never known what to do with it. Maybe it would be helpful to you now. And it was a July 4th. He had a dream. He and Jesus were sitting on a hill watching a bunch of fireworks and just oohing and aahing how beautiful it was. And Jesus leaned over to him and said, the real fireworks are behind you. And he goes, what? What do you mean? He's the real fireworks are behind you. So he turns around and he sees back up on the hill, Sarah and I sitting next to each other, very tenderly talking. Mm-hmm. And Sarah was crying in the dream and we were talking and I was just talking to her very gently. And Jesus said, this is the most exquisite thing Wayne will ever do. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't know if that's a dream, right? So I don't know if that's true, but I tell you what, that passion I've shared in the past about loving a woman well, I had that kind of strength of encouragement. So when Sarah's opening back up to me, I'm in a really, really different space. Something has shifted internally in my heart that really could make room for this, and genuinely so. Not feel like I was pretending on the outside with all this, you know, stuff on the inside that needed to get out. I really have felt like, and I, by saying it's the most exquisite thing I've ever done, I'm not taking it away from this. Is the hardest work that Sarah has done, yeah, to face this trauma, to walk through it. She's doing the hard work here. I'm alongside her. I'm encouraging her. I'm groping for the things to say that might help her. I keep reading those books. I mean, The Body Keeps the Score, reading it. I mean, that's where the thoughts have come in terms of how am I with her, mm-hmm, when these memories are surfacing, or when she's feeling this pain or that hurt or whatever. And I really feel like God put me through a graduate school of tenderness during the days of my agony.
Yeah.
So I'm seeing as horrible days of agonizing, just feeling robbed and cheated and treated unfairly. At the same time, God's working into my heart a tenderness, mm, that helps Sarah be Sarah. And it feels genuine. It doesn't feel like I'm pretending and, you know, months pass, I'll get back to being the old Wayne again. I don't want to get back to that. I really have enjoyed learning the softness and tenderness that helps Sarah be Sarah.
And also he was... repeatedly being reassuring for me to allow me, or it's almost like giving me permission to be honest and to speak what I want to speak or need to speak, mm-hmm, and owning up to a lot of the behind the back type of things that I had done in order to do what I did. And there was, for me, and how the trauma, and how I have now looked back and see how I have lived as far as with being afraid to be honest with people. Mm-hmm. It's like I want them to give me permission. I need them to say, it's okay if you tell me honestly. And he would be continuously telling me, it's okay. You can be honest. And joking sometimes can't be worse than what I've already done. Right. And so, and when I told about the phone, that's the only way I was able to tell about the storage units and tell about the phone.
Keep waiting for you to tell me about the apartment in Paris.
The backup to the backup plan.
Yeah, well, whatever. I keep waiting for something else to happen. I own something else in the world I don't know that we're a part of. But.
And he didn't erupt in anger, or he didn't, you know, get mad. We talked it, you know, through. I mean, it had to be horrible and all the different things that I was telling him. You know, I had a checking account, had the lawyer, had the retainer, you know. I mean, it's just...
It pays to keep better track of finances than I can. I was totally trusting Sarah with all things financial. Now I'm going, I missed a lot. I should have kept my eye on a few things.
I mean, I had split everything, and in my mind it was going to be, you know, it was, but... and
it was your money?
But no, it wasn't. It was our money, you know. So, but those are very secretive... very sneaky, deceptive. I mean, this is the mental space in which I was at, because I was suicidal and was this. If I didn't do that, this is the only other, at the time, the only other option I felt that I could do. And so, I mean, I had met with a lawyer. I made a retain. I mean, so it would just... All those things were hard, and they didn't come all out at the same time. You know, it's little bit by little bit. And I'm sitting there at Lazy Dog, I'm thinking, I got to tell him. I got to tell him.
Yeah.
How do I tell him? You know? Don't be mad at me, please.
Well, and I want to intervene. I want to interject just for a second there, Sarah, because you listed off some words, some descriptors of your behavior and around those things. And honestly, Sarah, and I told Wayne this, and I told Jess this as we were praying for you guys and walking through this together with you guys. If I would have felt like your life was in danger, and I was your therapist, I would have coached you to do the exact same thing.
Yeah.
I would have showed you how to do it. I would have, like, literally when Wayne told me what happened.
I feel the anger rising again.
Sorry. But, like, literally when Wayne told me what happened, the first thing that went through my mind is that was a safety plan. That was coached, and that was a safety plan.
Yeah.
Like, because I've been trained to do the, and somebody who is in a situation in which they feared for their life, that's how I would have coached them how to exit that situation safely and be able to move forward in their life in a way that they didn't feel like their life was going to end because of some aggression or whatever it might be. And so I hear this, the sneaky, I hear the deception, I hear those words, and yet, like, I think in the mental space, and you talked about this a little bit before, in the mental space that you were in, it was either I leave Wayne and I step out of this and I go into this solitude, or I kill myself.
Yeah.
Door one or door two.
Yeah.
And if I, hearing as your therapist, was sitting in the room and said, it heard you say door one or door two, I'm gonna be like, okay, door one, we're gonna get you out of the situation and then we're gonna figure out what we do from there. But right now you need safe space. And so how do we make this happen? How do we create that safe space where you can get enough distance to where you don't feel threatened anymore and your life is no longer in danger?
It's like, what is even planning? What was, in a way, what were you thinking? Like vacations and what? I wasn't. I mean, I was just trying to live through each day.
Yeah, yeah.
And there was no long-term plans. You know, I had signed a lease, but that's it.
When we alluded to this before, earlier on when I was sharing a bit of my story, but a dream that came to a sister, Joni, out of Oklahoma, someone that Sarah and I both know, went on an Israel trip with us and knows my son. He was there too. She, early on in this, she had a dream one night, and she told me about the next day. She had the same dream two nights in a row, exactly the same dream. And the dream was she was out with Sarah and Julie and Andy, our kids, and they were at a bar and they were getting a little buzz on. And Sarah's never drank alcohol in her life, but they said Sarah was just a totally different person, a little buzzed. And even my son in the dream remarks, wow, I've never seen my mom like this, just free, fun, happy. Yeah. And then she said, we came back from wherever we were to where you were. And we walked in the room, Sarah totally changed. And so she leaned over to Sarah and she said, what just happened? And in the dream, Sarah says, I've not been honest with him. And she says, why haven't you been honest with him? And in the dream, Sarah says, have you ever been dishonest with someone? Which sounds like Sarah. And Joni in the dream says, well, yeah. I said, why were you dishonest? Joni said, because I was afraid. And that's where the dream ended. And when she shared that with me, and I just, that my wife, I've always, since we've been married, my dream of marriage is the two become one. That's how Jesus talked about it. That's how Paul talks about it. I've always wanted to be one with Sarah. I've always wanted her to be honest with me. I've always tried to create that space for her.
Yeah.
But it is true that she has had a part of her, which we're now seeing in a lot of ways, not just in the last few months. Mm-hmm. We now talk about the third member of our marriage. There's Wayne and there's Sarah and there's trauma. And this trauma, when it raises its head, Sarah becomes a different person than who she really is. It's this not the real Sarah. It's a wounded Sarah that's trying to survive in the fight, flight, freeze, or fawn, mostly freezing and fawning modes. And it's been fun now. We laugh at it. We talk about, gosh, we've had three people in this marriage since the beginning.
Yeah.
And for the most part, it hasn't had much impact. It hasn't, although Sarah's not always, you know, had a real in touch with her wants and things she wants to do. It's been those kinds of things we look back and go, somewhat trauma related.
Yeah.
But in the last 10, 15 years, that trauma has been more and more surfacing. And so there's been this darker side to Sarah, which she's kept hidden. I didn't know this piece was in our marriage. She'd cry at night downstairs for hours, and I'd wake up in the night and see she was gone. And then sometimes I'd even find her downstairs. She'd say, I just couldn't sleep well or whatever. And she wouldn't let me in on those things. And it was part of it, 'cause it was something she wasn't letting herself in on for the most part. So, you know, trauma wants to stay hidden, and mostly from herself. And I love that God has allowed this to surface now. I mean, we both wish it had happened you know, 45 years ago instead of now. But this is good. This is so good in what it's shaping in Sarah. And even for us to go back and talk about things going, that was trauma, Sarah. That wasn't Sarah. And she's even saying that. We had an incident yesterday of just, I had a very high pressure day yesterday. I won't go into all the details about it, but a lot of stress, not related to her. And so I said a couple of things that kind of were not, you know, it's just me venting some frustration, which I've tried not to do since Sarah's been back. But yesterday was just, and Sarah, later in the evening, she said, I don't know how it came up. She said, you know, a couple of times today when you kind of said some things, I'm going, oh, okay, tell me about it. But I loved the way she had processed this. Old Sarah would have just taken on the frustration. Somehow I've got to make him happy. She was actually to herself at the moment saying, he's under a lot of stress today. So I'm just going to let this, you know, I'm going to let this pass. And she didn't take it on, which for Sarah, and knowing what I know now about her, this is a major, major demonstration of the healing God's bringing to her life. Just the way she managed something very small yesterday. And we talked about it very freely last night. And I went, ah, you're right. I was. And I'm glad you didn't own it for me. I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, because it was, because I would just say, okay, he's got to get the computers in to Apple Store by 4:40. He's just stressed to doing that. And I just was trying to say, okay, it's because he's stressed. Just get the computers in. And
there's more to that story than just getting computers in.
But yeah, but anyhow, it's just getting them in.
That was not the stress point. I easily going to get them there by 4:45.
But then, I mean, he was just, I forget, there was something he was apologizing nice. And, you know, it was just a couple comments and it, what it was, it's just like, oh, this is, it's like it brought back the old patterns.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just like,
internally for you.
Yeah, internally. Yeah. And me and him. And then I'm just like, and just, I just kind of inside cringe and I just, but then, you know, just wait. And he was feeling rushed. And I felt that, you know, and then that just adds to me. And so I just was trying to be calm. And then we talked a little bit about this morning too, where, you know, just and normally when we would talk or he would say something and I would feel responsible. I would, start getting nervous and panic and from just if he was bringing up, can we talk, you know, and and I wasn't, and so it was just it was a different way to be able to talk.
I honestly, if I could go back in and rewrite the scripture passage, I would rewrite it, be transformed by the renewing of the trauma mind. Right? Like, because that's
adding words to scripture.
I am. Please don't burn me as a heretic.
I'm not.
But where your mind took it, right, Sarah? Like, as God disarms that, as he brings the healing in, as there's that renewing of your mind through the love and the power of God moving through your heart, it's where your mind goes, right? Because initially, your trauma mind would have immediately taken that to a place where it was a mark against yourself, right? A disapproval, I did something wrong, it's me, like, and immediately you would be on guard again, right? You would be fawning, overcompensating, distancing, like the whole thing would be activated. And yet God's recalibrating that to where that you were able to have enough pause to say, even though the threat of that and you going there was there, there was enough pause. God had created enough pause for you to say, oh, well, no, maybe this doesn't have anything to do with me. Maybe he's stressed by some other things and I can stay in this with him and not go into threat mode right away.
It's been very helpful with the description of the three of us in this marriage.
Yeah.
'Cause I have a hard time comprehending and separating my adult person, Sarah, now, who's kind of more rational, from the traumatized brain that I got or was formed in me at a very young age, around 4 or 5, whatever. And so, but seeing that there's three of us, and sometimes it's Wayne, and then it's either trauma Sarah or Sarah. And so it helps me. It's not like I'm two people, but yet I respond in two different ways. I mean, there's just, there is that both of those, all three of us have been together in all of our marriage.
I'm not a bigamist.
unbeknownst to either one of us.
You mean a polygamist?
it's only two. It'd be bigamist, wouldn't it?
I don't know.
Oh, I think I did mean polygamist.
Yeah, polygamist.
I'm totally confused.
So, more than one wife.
I thought bigamist was two wives.
Sorry, Sarah.
That's okay. I don't know. I'm not that person. I don't know. It's you guys.
I'm cutting all that out.
It's been three of us. I mean, it sounds odd, but it helps me to understand internally who's been responding and not. And it's not like, but those have always been there, but it just feels, it helps me to figure out.
And trauma Sarah isn't really Sarah. It's imposter Sarah, right?
Yeah.
So when I see how she left me and what she did and all that, it's very easy for me to chalk that up to imposter Sarah. I realize this Sarah's body did the mechanisms for that. But it's very easy for me to let go of that, going, wow, that was not you. That's not what Sarah would choose to do in her right, conscious, rational mind. It was something she was driven to out of this imposter self. I think we do see God's hand in a lot of this, and we also see the enemy's hand. There's a lot of strings he's pulling to try to destroy Sarah, first of all, and then failing that, trying to destroy us, our marriage, which would ultimately destroy me. If my marriage had been destroyed or if she had killed herself, I do see the hand of the enemy in these things. Not just trauma, it's trauma that he's manipulated and exploited to try to end something that's lovely here. And thankfully, it has failed.
One of the key things that I just observed in your journey, Wayne, is God really interceding and giving you that piece of wisdom on being able to separate trauma Sarah from authentic Sarah, because I feel like you were able to really hold space for authentic Sarah. In some of our conversations that are early on, you're like, if that was actually Sarah and she did that to me, I don't know what I'm going to do. But then as you untangled that and was like, no, that isn't my wife. I know, even early on, you're like, this doesn't seem like her. This doesn't seem like the woman that I know. And so even then, before you knew everything about the trauma brain and this third member of your marriage, you were even then fighting for authentic Sarah, wholehearted Sarah.
I love this authentic Sarah thing.
It's just an odd way to think about yourself, but it that concept, it just helped me, just for me to understand myself and how that has been, unbeknownst to us and unintentionally, but that has been me and it's been there.
Authentic Sarah is hilarious. That's why Joni's dream, how do I make a place that makes it easy for Sarah to be honest?
Yeah.
Even if I don't think I deserve some of the threat she feels, because I don't, you know, I know that comes from her trauma, not from things I've done to her, but I can still go overboard in creating as safe a place as possible, because the real Sarah is the fun Sarah.
Isn't that the invitation or the freedom that God draws each one of us into, right? There's the old self sacrificing or crucifying the old self and being reborn in a new, in the wholehearted, authentic expression of who God created us to be. Yeah. Right? And sometimes that might be through trauma. Sometimes that might be through other forms of brokenness or other areas of our life that we're challenged by. But man, I mean, that to be able to externalize that and say, this is a part of my journey, but this isn't my heart. This isn't my identity. This isn't the white stone with the new name that my Lord has given me.
And actually being with her through this, it has changed me. So my transformation, this slower, gentler, kinder Wayne, I appreciate more. So it's not just something to do for Sarah. I really enjoy this. And we're talking about getting ready to go out on an RV. We watched an hour and a half video last night of all that can go wrong in this process. Yeah, it's going to need a kinder, gentler, slower way to survive this together. So we both had a good chuckle about that last night.
Speed does not help a process of setting up camp.
No, no, it does not. Smooth and slow. Yes. Smooth and slow.
Yes. And have multiple checklists.
Yes. Which Sarah has already shown that she is a master at creating. I mean, she can do a great job with those lists.
I hope that's authentic, Sarah, because the other day she told me, remind me of this tomorrow. And I'm going, okay. Ooh. And then tomorrow she said, what did I ask you to remind me of? It took us 10 minutes to figure it out. I said, where's list Sarah? Because list Sarah, this we would have known this.
What do you think? Is it, Sarah? Like, are you untangling that? Is that part of?
I don't know. I meander. Like, I was in the grocery store and I was in one side of this, and then I'm just, oh no, I gotta go get that. So I went across and then, oh no, I gotta get this. And it's just, I don't know if it's a lack of being able to concentrate because of processing all the trauma, or if part of it is the motivation and the drive that was coming from, I think, the trauma to keep me working and staying ahead of it,
yeah,
is not there. Now, whether that will come back to a little bit, a degree, I don't know. Because right now it's just, you know, yeah, there's a lot of my previous motivation is not all there.
This is the treasure hunt, right? Now, we're going to find out as Sarah kind of helps resolve what trauma is going on in her and as the emotions shift. Now we're going to find out what real Sarah really is. And I think I already know because I've lived with non-traumatized Sarah too. So there's lots about Sarah, the laughter, the fun she had when we dated and early on in our marriage, just things about Sarah that I see coming back as the trauma recedes that I go, okay, I think I've known this girl. I don't know how that's going to change how we live together. And I'm really excited to find out, but I'm not in a hurry to find out. It's going to unfold as the days come.
Yeah.
Well, and I love that. That's one thing that I've observed, Sarah, is just as this healing process has gone on, that permission, and Wayne's continued to cultivate that permission to not do, to not perform, to not be on for maybe the first time in all your life, in your remembered life. And just, I mean, the incredible deep breath that is to the soul. Yeah. Right? Like, I mean, just a huge deep breath to the soul. And in some regards, disorienting. Like to walk into the grocery store and just meander because you're like, I don't have my list and I don't know. I'm just going to kind of sort it out, I guess.
I even had a list the other day and we went to the grocery store and I lost our list the week.
Somewhere between the car and the store, the list vanished.
So. And he says, that's why I put it on the phone. I said, no, I don't like putting it on the phone. Because then you have to pull your phone. Because then you have to, you know, take the face mask. I still wear a face mask. And, you know, take that off and have to log in. And then, yeah, it's easier to make it. But, yeah, I still can't find it. I don't know where it fell out. So
And yet it's okay, right? Like, I don't see angst washing over you of, I lost the list. How dare I?
Yeah.
It's, I lost the list. We sorted it out. Life moved on.
And she didn't that day either. She didn't get lost in the fact that she lost the list. We just had to go in there and go, okay, what was it? And we're trying to remember. And that I'm even there is a miracle. I've gone to the store with Sarah before this season of our life probably 5 times. And most of those were on vacation, most likely.
Well, and as you guys have processed that, it was part of, right, the pace, Sarah having to be on, the expectations, like all those different things that God's been redefining in both of your lives. You know, I the words that I wrote down for Wayne was vulnerable, tender, slow-paced, geared back, soft, patient, humble, and teachable. Those were the things that I had seen as things that God was doing in Wayne's life to create him or to make him into a safe space for you, Sarah, to be a safe landing space, not only for you, but just in his own life. And then for you, Sarah, courage, vulnerable, authentic, risk-taking, bold, humble, not fake humble, but or fawning, but real humility.
Yeah.
To be able to walk and own those things. Like those were the words that stood out as I was just praying about the two of you and what would it take for this to happen, right? And in the pace that it happened.
Yeah,
because I'm still, in some regards, playing catch up at how fast the Holy Spirit's working.
We are too. except for Sarah. Sarah is, when she deals with the trauma internally, it feels like this taking forever. But yeah. It's only been 5 weeks that she even recognized the trauma existed in her life. So I think it's incredibly rapid, too.
Yeah, it's been rapid at times. I don't remember where we stopped previously in talking about what would happen, but there was one episode that has a memory this last week. I guess I can just share a little bit about it. It's been the hardest one for me to process. I'm still processing. And even in this, it's just amazing how, I don't know necessarily, it could be the brain, but subconscious, but I feel like Father's being very gentle in how he has unraveled it. It's just been a little bit, one day I would remember, you know, like you're building a story, you know, you have the basis, and then another thing gets added into that, and it keeps building and more memories and putting it together. And early on in this one, this is the only time I've had it where this last one was in a bathroom and there was a window and it was closed, but how do you say it? There was like a beam of light that's like shining through clouds or something. Your sun shines through clouds where you see a beam come down. There was a beam of light that was coming down in that early on. And I just think that was kind of, and it's not like it was, that was back in the memory. It was just, that was in
the recreation
of it. Yeah. And so I think because this one was very aggressive, it was different than the other ones. It was more violent, and it was.
Grandpa was drunk.
Yeah.
And very violent and pinning her down, trapping her.
And then there was another person in there. So it was just the level of intensity. And I was a few years older than, I was probably about 7 or 8 or something like that, I think. And it's just that presence and that light helped me. And I think Father knew the intensity of what was going to be coming out of this. And was, you know, just helping me in that. It was just, I don't even know why I even started going in that, but it was just the intensity of this and the violence was just hard, and how Father was there.
And I was with her in real time while this was unfolding. Yeah. And she's talking about the aggression, the violence, the terror of being pinned down. And then she goes, there's a light. There's a light coming through the window. And I'm going, what's the light? And she immediately says, it's Jesus. I'm like, this is so cool, man. I'm glad Jesus is in this moment with her. And she saw the light. She said, I don't think the light was there when it happened. And I'm going, it doesn't matter. It's there now. And Jesus is wanting to be part of this memory with you. And at the end of this memory, she gets rescued. Somebody comes running to the door and opens it and stops what's going on, which is amazing. Thinks it's her mom. And we really had the thought, this just came recently, just in the last day, and the memory started maybe 3 days ago.
Yeah, 3 or 4 days. Yeah.
And we had a thought that this may be the last thing. This definitely completes Sarah's story that explains so much to the pains in her body, to the way she responds to, she pulled out all her eyelashes at this age, when this worst of the assaults happened to her. And we just go, this could be the last one. And how gentle would that be for Jesus to show up in that one, for her to be rescued out of it? She's still processing. It's very deep. So we're not done processing this part of what Sarah's dealing with. But if this, because what she dreads is that pain in her stomach. Here comes another episode. Mm-hmm. And we've had multiple episodes of, like we've said before, increasing intensity, increasing darkness. But again, it's been God, her mind letting her in as she can process. And this may be the end of that story, which would be so wonderful if it is. That's what we're praying.
It's just, you know, you think of where, I don't even remember when, exactly where it was and the first one. And then they all, how if Father just built it. It was just a little stepping stone. You know, I can take little baby steps, take another step.
Everyone's story of trauma and their healing from it is unique. We are grateful at how quickly Sarah's trauma story emerged and how we've been able to process it. But hers is not a model for anyone else. No matter what you're facing, God has a way for you too, to navigate through it, to increasing freedom and wholeheartedness in Him. And a couple of housekeeping details before we leave. For those of you interested in the Jake Colson Book Club, we'll be covering Chapter 5 of So You Don't Want to Go to Church Anymore next Saturday, August 20, 1 o'clock p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. You can join us in the Zoom room or watch on the Facebook page. If you need more details, check the podcast notes at thegodjourney.com. And one other thing, and I know it's late notice, everything's just kind of fallen together, which is kind of how we're going to live for a while, Sarah and me. We've sold our home, more about that next week, and we've got an RV, and we're going to head east. And we're going to start in Westcliff, Colorado, where we hold our 20s and 30s retreat. They've invited us to come back. Not age limited this time. We've got room for about 30 people who just want to hang out with Sarah and I for a weekend and see what God might show us, see what we can explore together. No plans. This is not a celebration for Wayne and Sarah. This is just a chance at the beginning of a tour, which we're calling the Return to Innocence Tour, where we're going to just explore God's light among people. And if you want to come join us, you're welcome to do it. You need to email me, waynej@lifestream.org, and I'll get you the details. But it's coming up really quick. It's only 2 weeks out. So if you're in the area and want to come or you want to fly in, you're more than welcome. It's the first 30 get to come. We look forward to seeing you there if you want to come join us. If not, we'll be heading east from there. And who knows, maybe we'll show up in a town near you.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com